This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
How many years do you have to do that?
I just did the 4 years coming out.
Right.
So that wasn't a lifer, but really enjoyed the time when I was in.
Yeah. And they paid for your schooling, right?
They pay for school too, yes. So you can't beat that.
Yeah, and then you put your 4 years in, and yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Did my 4 years, got to travel. I was a supply cost officer on the ship, so I got to really run all the business functions for the ship.
Okay.
Tremendous learning experience, and that started my transition from being an engineer to being a business person.
Right, because you were in the engineering school at MIT. You weren't a business major.
Right,
like Jack was. Yes. That's interesting. So you wouldn't think you'd go to the Navy and get business experience, basically running the operations of the ship, right? Making sure they had, a supply purchasing, right?
Right. So logistics. So
yeah.
I ran the ship's retail, food service, paid everybody, and then logistics with the parts.
So you got a lot of business experience, yeah.
Yeah, tremendous. So they sent me to school for 6 months to train in all those areas.
Okay.
And really liked business. I mean, I, of course, loved engineering, which was about solving problems. But
Right. Business
is about solving problems, too.
Of course.
But it's nice because they're shorter term and you can sort of see the results.
Yeah. Faster. Now, engineering is a great background, I think, for most. I used to say law, but I'm not so sure if I'm sure of that anymore. But I'm definitely sure engineering is a good background.
Right. So
were you out to, you were shipped out to sea a lot? Or
the information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hello, my name is Andrew Frazier, Business Growth Pro and CFO. I help business owners to maximize the value of their company by working with them to grow revenue, increase profit, and obtain financing.
Andrew, okay, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you finally sitting down with me. I know you and I were going to do it sooner, and then the pandemic hit, and we're all locked in our houses, and then we scheduled today. So I appreciate you coming on. Maybe you want to talk about, where you grew up, where you're from, and how you got into business. We'll talk about some of the businesses you've been involved with, and then I want to get into, your whole business, running your business like a pro and all the stuff you're doing on the coaching side and business growth side.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me, Mitch.
Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Okay. Grew up there So, of course, I'm a big fan of the Steelers.
Right. Well, we won't hold that against you. I'm a Giants fan, so.
Okay. Definitely. I mean, you know, I can like the Giants, too.
You got better Super Bowl history, though, than we do.
Right. And I got to live there during the time when they won a lot of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. Good time.
And,
you know. You probably hate the Cowboys, right, Andrew?
Of course. It's up for. You know, we had to root for Tony Dorsett.
Of course. But you still hate the Cowboys. Right? Of course, yeah. I rooted for Tony Dorsett, too. Hated the Cowboys.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, really grew up there. My parents were both teachers. So that made, you know, they made sure I did very well in school.
Right.
And actually in fourth grade, my brother and I ended up having a paper route. Which was a first business experience, which was really good because it teaches you a lot of things.
Yeah.
And we were able to, you know, have money when we were kids a lot more than everyone else.
I don't think you can get a paper route fourth grade now.
No.
No way, right?
Adults have them now.
Yeah. I think you got to be full 15 at least, a teenager, right? Or maybe it's more competition. The adults want it.
Yeah. No, it's a lot more competition, but it was great. Gig and we actually turned it into a snow shoveling business as well because we knew everybody.
So right. You had the roots, right? Snow. Yeah.
Right.
We had the customer list.
Right. Actually, it was so much of a customer list, we would hire our friends to help with it.
Right.
And, you know, really growing up, was into sports. Loved baseball, loved basketball. Actually, in high school, I played tennis.
Okay.
And you know, growing up, it was a lot of fun.
Okay. And then, so where'd you go to school? Did you go to school locally in Pittsburgh, or?
I actually escaped after after high school. I don't think I've been back for more than a short visit.
Your parents and relatives still live there?
Everybody's still there.
Okay.
So I'm the only one that got out, but okay. I graduated from MIT undergrad with a degree in mechanical engineering.
So one of those bad schools, right?
Yeah.
Just walk in, you know, just knock on their door, say, hey, I want to go.
Yeah. It was really easy there too.
Now, is that why you know Jack through? Because I know Jack Killian introduced us. You know him through, I know you're not his age. So did you meet him through like alumni events or things like that?
Yeah, actually he led a group in New Jersey for people who graduated from business school. So,
got it. Okay. That's the Sloan School, right? MIT?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So yeah, got to know him, got a Navy ROTC scholarship when I went. So when I graduated, I became a Naval Supply Corps officer.
Right.
Which was a great experience.
Sure.
And
thank you for your service. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Enjoyed it.
How many years do you have to do that?
I just did the 4 years coming out.
Right.
So that wasn't a lifer, but really enjoyed the time when I was in.
Yeah. And they paid for your schooling, right?
They paid for school too, so you can't beat that.
Yeah, and then you put your 4 years in, and yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Did my 4 years, got to travel. I was a supply cost officer on a ship, so I got to really run all the business functions for the ship.
Okay.
Tremendous learning experience, and that started my transition from being an engineer to being a business person.
Right, because you were in the engineering school at MIT. You weren't a business major.
Right,
like Jack was. Yes. That's interesting. So you wouldn't think you'd go to the Navy and get business experience, basically running the operations of the ship, right? Making sure they had, a supply purchasing, right?
Right. So logistics. So I ran the ship's retail, food service, paid everybody, and then logistics with the parts. So
you got a lot of business experience. Yeah.
Yeah, tremendous. So they sent me to school for 6 months to train in all those areas.
Okay.
And really liked business. I mean, I, of course, loved engineering, which was about solving problems. But business is about solving problems, too.
Of course.
But it's nice because they're shorter term and you can sort of see the results.
Yeah. Faster. Now, engineering is a great background, I think, for most. I used to say law, but I'm not so far, I'm sure of that anymore. But I'm definitely sure engineer is a good background.
Yeah. Right. So
were you out to, you were shipped out to sea a lot, or?
We were at sea 50% of the time.
Okay.
A good 50% of the time. So
Obviously don't get seasick, right? So,
well, everybody gets seasick at a point if it's really bad.
You get over it.
I was better than most, so I was thankful for that.
Yeah, I guess if you're out in the middle of the ocean and it's bad, like anybody could get seasick, right?
Oh, yeah. Like,
I get seasick like in my bathtub. I'm not, I'm bad.
Yeah, no, it's not a good feeling, but it passes.
Yeah. And, okay, so that was 4 years. So you spent 4 years in the Navy.
Yes.
And so
after graduating, after finishing up, I went to work for a company called McMaster Car Supply Company.
Okay.
Private distribution company that compete with Grainger.
Uh-huh, and, sure.
They're privately owned, and they're probably bigger than Grainger.
Oh, okay.
So I worked in their warehouse supervisor, and we used to ship 8,000 orders a day out of my department.
So that was logistics too.
That was, logistics.
Their own logistics, though. You're not doing it for someone else. It's their own logistics.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
So, from there I went to business school because I wanted to learn more about business.
Right.
Had an opportunity to go to New York University and study finance.
That's Stern School, right?
New York University Stern School. Yes, sir.
Got it. See, I know the circuit a little bit,
Okay.
Okay. So that's is that in the Village or is that?
That is in the Village.
Okay. So, all right, good. So that's a great school. Yeah. Top five. So probably great experience, not only going to the Stern School, but being in the city, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that was great. And had already moved to the area. So got the chance to live in Jersey, but go to the city. And especially as a finance major, you get to do, it's a finance capital. So, went to a lot of Wall Street firms.
Yeah, a lot of internships. And did you work on Wall Street afterward?
I worked on the buy side. So I worked with people on Wall Street. I actually worked at New York Life Insurance Company in the investments area. So I had a chance to, work with the chief investment officer on different investment strategies for the company.
Right. So this is investing their assets.
Correct. Because insurance companies have like the most assets out of most.
Yeah. Because they collect money from people. They got to do something with it in order to be able to meet their obligations. Right.
Right. Right. So,
of course. So you're dealing with all kinds of assets, not just like stocks and bonds. They're buying all kinds of hard assets, right? Different categories and things.
All kinds. Some equity, private equity, but primarily fixed income. So
because they had fixed obligations.
Correct.
Right? So you learned that whole business.
Yes. Yeah. And then I got my CFA. So I went through the Chartered Financial Analyst Program, which was a challenge, but was able to do that, which is sort of like a CPA.
Okay.
For investment manager.
While you're working at New York Life?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And that was local? You did that in the city too?
Did that in the city. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
And then from there, I had an opportunity to be the chief operating officer of the Executive Leadership Council, which is a trade organization out of D.C. that represents the most senior African-Americans in corporate America.
So did you move to D.C.?
I moved to D.C. for about a year and a half.
Yeah, D.C. is a neat town, right?
Yeah, D.C. is great. I mean, still like it up here in Jersey a little better, but but enjoy my time down there.
Right. Okay. And then what brought you back here?
Finished up, not really a long-term nonprofit person. So,
The nonprofit world's different than the for-profit driven business world, different pace.
Yes. Yeah. So it was different. And I knew I was coming back. I kept my house and everything while I was down there. And my wife worked up here. So,
Knew it was a short-term.
Yeah, I knew I was, wasn't going to stay there forever.
Right, Okay.
But
and what'd you come back to?
I came back, actually, it was right after the real estate crisis.
That was like 06, 08, something like
08,
that? 08. 08, right. Yeah, it started probably 06, 07, and then really dropped off the cliff in 08, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So I had plenty to do because, unfortunately, I owned real estate in Florida. Okay. So that was the worst hit place.
Yeah. Oh my God. We had people, we were helping them sell condos. I don't do real estate in Florida, but I have friends and stuff. We were helping them. We were doing short sales. I mean, they were 50% of their value, 30% of their value. It was ridiculous. Yeah. The only thing was worse, I think, was Vegas. Vegas was worse.
These ghost it might towns. Not have been worse.
It didn't seem that way, right?
Yeah. I owned a condo in a development with like 33 units. 20 of them were in foreclosure.
Yeah. So how do you compete with that? You're trying to get rid of your unit and there's another 19 available. So, and there's more available in other complexes. I mean, that's what just kills these things. So
yeah,
that's the risky. Was it a thing that you were renting or was it just something you were just going using?
No, I was renting. I had a few properties, all of them rented. So
yeah,
definitely a challenge. So I spent time doing that, did business consulting, and really my business grew out of that over time.
Got it. You started working with certain business owners. Was it any particular industry you started working with or?
No, it's not specific industries. I mean, basically I focus on business best practices on the strategy and financial management side. So every type of company needs that.
Right. But you're dealing with bigger companies. They're not, entrepreneurs don't, you know, deal with investment strategies and they don't have any money.
So well, no, financial management more like a lot of businesses have cash flow issues.
Okay.
A lot of businesses are looking for financing.
Okay.
Doing the financial projections for their companies.
Got it. Helping them with their balance sheets so they're bankable, that type of stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, cash flows, it's interesting. So cash flow is a double-edged sword, right? Because cash hides a lot of things. And then if you're not working with somebody like you, you hit something like this pandemic where your cash completely stops and then it's like the ocean went back out to sea and you could see what's underneath in the sand and you got all these problems.
A lot of companies were just hanging on before this.
And, yeah.
You know, this has been a blow. Fortunately, the government has actually done some things.
Yeah, they've helped. But you can't keep printing money. You and I both know that it's eventually your economy collapses. So, but there's businesses that can't even operate at 50% of their capacity. So how do they stay open? Or you, like you said, if you had a business that was just getting by, it was more like a lifestyle business.
Right.
They might think twice whether they want to go back to just getting by.
Right. But, you know, the one thing is, whenever there's challenges, there's opportunities. So there's a lot of opportunities out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Creative and proactive.
Right. So. Yeah. And you know the people that are always looking at it that way. Like they see change as an opportunity, whether it's good change, bad change. And there's always an opportunity. And there are sections of the economy that are thriving. There's businesses that are don't know what to do with themselves. You know, and then there's others that are not going to, you know, but some of the good ones, the good people that are good at that stuff, probably a lot of people you work with, they'll get through it no matter what industry they're in. They'll figure a way to collaborate, to partner up, to work together, you know, whatever. And then some people are just going to put their head in the sand, unfortunately. We'll have to see what happens with all that stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. That's the worst thing you can do is put your head in the sand.
Yeah, right. You got to make it, you got to get out there, make it happen. I remember when this started. So, you know, I'm a small business attorney. So a lot of my business is closed. Well, I mean, they all closed. I had some large real estate transactions. I was working on some business sales, all came to a screeching halt. I don't even know if they're going to start up again. And I had nothing to do. So yeah, sure. I got a PPP loan and I got, you know, support and everything, but I basically set up my computer and you use Zoom all the time. I'd never used it. Jack used to tell me about Zoom. I was like, what are you talking about? And then the 78-year-old guy's telling the 53-year-old guys about technology. It's funny. And then, so I set up on my laptop at home and brought home my podcasting equipment with my mic and just hit it. I was doing I'm still doing a lot of meetings every week just to stay connected with people and grow my network. And things are starting to come back. They're a little slow, but they're starting to come back now that people are doing some wills and they're doing some business agreements. And they realize, you know what? I guess we're going back to business. We got to deal with issues. So I'm hoping that comes back, but I'm not a mortgage broker where the guy can't answer his phone fast enough right now, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I'm confident. I'm not worried about it. I'm not going to sit around and just look out the window and say, oh, business will come to me, but you got to work hard and it'll come. Right.
Right. And, you know, even if you don't have a lot of business right now, now's a great time to develop relationships.
Correct.
With your clients, yeah. with others. People have more time than they used to have. They want to talk to people.
Yep.
So they're open to talking to new people. So now's a great time to do that, especially through LinkedIn.
Yeah. LinkedIn and Zoom, you can go back to back to back to back. Maybe you got to pee quickly, but you know, that's about it. You don't have to drive somewhere.
Right. You know? Right.
I was talking to somebody earlier. They have an hour and a half commute to work. So they gained 3 hours by being able to. So she goes, I think if I got to go back to work, I'm going to move closer to work. I'm like, yeah, that might be a good idea. Because yeah. I mean, you really, there's people that have, I know some people in South Jersey that have almost 2 hour commutes when they're working in the city. So they spend 4 hours commuting. That's 12, 13 hour day. If you're working 8 hours, you know, of right. just lost time. You never get back, whether it's family time or work or whatever the time is. And I think that's going to change our whole society, you know?
Right. A lot of working together. Yeah, a lot of people aren't going back or not going back the same way, you know. Right.
So you really started coaching and consulting and, you know, doing all the stuff you do in like 08, 09. Is that right?
We started in 08, 09.
Okay.
And, you know, built up the business. As you know, when you start out, it takes a while. So
yeah, got to kiss a lot of frogs, talk to a lot of people.
Right. So did that. I did some teaching. I did training. And really built relationships, did a lot of networking, making connections, and, you know, fortunately I was able to, first have the staying power because a lot of right. people can't, you know, sustain for a couple years while you're growing it to size.
Yeah.
And connected with some really good clients that I've been able to help a lot. So, you know, having good experience, getting referrals makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. No question about it. Well, I think that's a lot of small business owners don't kind of anticipate like how long this will take. How much money do I need to be able to get this off the ground? It may not be a couple of years, but could be a good 6-8 months if you're a restaurant or something like that. And you better have the capital if it's November going into the winter. And things kind of die out. Forget about the pandemic. I mean, that was just something nobody can anticipate.
Right. So, yeah, no, definitely it takes time. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people, you know, moving towards the gig economy. A lot more people are going to be starting businesses going out on their own. And they don't really have a clue what it takes to do that. And it's much harder than you would think. And it takes longer and costs more than right. you would imagine.
I mean, I guess if you can do it as a side hustle while you're working, better ways to get started. It's funny. I was talking to Andrew to somebody the other day and they said to me, well, gig economy, like how many gigs? Is it 2 gigs or 3 gigs? I said, wait, are you talking about computers? You think it's like, that's what gig refers to? He goes, yeah. I go, no. Gig, you know, like a job, like you got a gig. He's like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. I'm like, yeah. That's what it is. It's like your side hustle or you have multiple jobs. Or there was a podcast about that where I forget the name of it, where he was interviewing people that had like, you know, they made their living based having multiple streams of income. Maybe they represented one of these, you know, energy companies and then they were involved in the multi-level thing and network marketing and then they had another company. I got to look up the, it was like, oh, it was called the Portfolio Career Podcast. So people have these portfolio careers that they mm-hmm. do, you know, I don't know if that's a real term or he made it up, but that's true. There's people that do that. They, you know, they got all kinds of things going on. I don't know if they really make a lot of money or they ever get off the ground, but I think sometimes you need focus a little bit.
Right. But, you know, but more and more people are having to do that.
Yeah. They got to fill and, right. Fill
that's becoming the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're not making enough money at work. So your work says, okay, you're working part-time and then, you know, maybe unemployment runs out or you can't get it. And then you got to figure other ways to do it. So you're hooking up with affiliated marketing companies. I do with the podcast. We're working on an affiliate relationship now with a company where we mm-hmm. can promote their services and they give us the service and, you know, and then hopefully it helps us grow the podcast and bring some money in if people use the service. So I'm talking okay. to several people about that kind of stuff, you know, because I would love to have some support for this and then it would help me focus on my law practice more. And so you and I can talk and then I can just ship it off to somebody and they can do all the editing and posting and everything like that.
That makes it a lot
easier. Be the celebrity that I'm trying to be, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not a celebrity, but you know, I could pretend like I'm one.
Well, you know, you're a celebrity in your own
world. In my own mind. Exactly. That's what's good about Zoom. You get to see yourself on TV. It's like you're on TV. So right. How, so that was in 08. So now, so you've been doing it for a while then. It's like, it's been 12 years.
It's been, yeah, it's been about 12 years that I've been on my own.
Okay. And so, what kind of businesses have you worked with? Have there been any particular industry, would you say, or?
Across the board, I've worked with, you know, over 500 business owners in many industries.
Right.
I focus on businesses, $20 million in revenues and below. So, you know, smaller type businesses. And okay. As of late, I've been working with a lot of manufacturing companies. And that fits because mechanical engineering, my focus was manufacturing.
Right.
And, you know, really connected with a great organization, NJMEP, New Jersey Manufacturing Experience Program. And support, it's run by John Kennedy, and they support manufacturers all through the state.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
So, is manufacturers, is it their operations that you're more consulting about or all this stuff?
Actually, I do outsource CFO work. For them.
So you're doing all their financial work.
So, yeah. And JMEP does have a lot of, you know, people to help you get lean and help you with your operations and all that stuff. But a few years ago, they added business growth services. So, you know, I help working with the businesses to help them grow because usually they know a lot more about engineering than business. So that's the area that a lot of times they need more help.
Right. Yeah, just because you and I can open a tool and die shop and we can make equipment like there's no tomorrow doesn't mean we can run a business that makes them and sells them and people get in a lot of trouble that way.
And especially now where everything's being more competitive, you got to become a better and better business person.
Yeah, for sure. I also find, and I've heard this from consultants, that it's very common as these companies grow that their departments tend to silo and not communicate as well as they should. So finance doesn't know what operations is doing. Operations is doing things that hurt, starting sales. They don't realize sales is trying to do stuff. They're all competing with each other internally, and it ends up, you know, making things difficult for the company.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have that. Sometimes you have the opposite. I run into the opposite a lot because, you know, the businesses grow,
right,
and have to be more structured, but
they just don't have the structure.
Right, because usually the owner's been in business the whole time, so they haven't been in a larger business to understand what structure looks like.
Right.
And so everybody's doing everything.
Yeah, right. Well, that's always a huge problem, right? You're deploying your human capital wrong, and all the people in the wrong jobs, they can't do an effective. And then companies, you know what they do? They put in systems in place from the top down. So the systems are being put on top of the people in the wrong jobs, or they're handling everything. And they're just, here you go. Here's another system to use. They're like, well, we're not even the right, and you know, doing the right job. So you put the people first and then give them tools to make their job right. But I think that's a huge problem. And I was just talking to a guy in from London who did a study. They studied like 150 businesses to start. Some of them were public companies, whatever, that had failed, literally gone out of business. And they were trying to figure out, okay, well, what are the, you know, consistent factors that led to their failure? And the three things, two of which we just talked about, one was not having a business plan, right? Like they had some things in writing, but there was never a cohesive plan that they used it on a regular basis, a part of their strategic planning and growth and change. The other one was putting in systems on top of your people, as opposed to putting in systems that support the people in the right place, like the pyramid was upside down. And the third thing was what you just said, which is as companies got very large, the different departments weren't communicating. So they would operate independently, and the salespeople weren't sitting down with operations, weren't sitting down with finance, weren't sitting down with HR and working together. They were all just kind of in their own silos and competing with each other. So it was interesting about how he kind of came to the conclusion. I was like, well, that's what I've been telling people. You need a business plan.
Yes, that's critical. It's one of the first things I do is work with people on their strategic plan.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a strategy, you're
flying blind. You might as well blindfold yourself and go to work and see what happens.
Yeah, you're winging it.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. It's like get in the car in the morning. You start the car, you have no idea where you're going.
Yep.
And just figure it out on your way. And it's not a healthy way to operate a business. There's some of these guys I meet that are like, you know them. They're like motivational speakers. They're badass people. You know, they're like, you can do it type of, you know, and that's fine. But they all say consistently, oh, come on, you don't need a business plan. And I'm like, yes, you do. And you don't really mean that. Like if you look at how you run your business, you're using plans. You're using strategies. You have strategy. You don't just like wing it. Do you wing it every day? They're like, no, I have this person and that person and we run it this way and they have all their systems and everything. I said, yeah, that's a business plan. Don't tell people they shouldn't have a business plan. They will fail.
Yeah.
Right?
And plus most businesses are more complicated than that.
Right. So, if you're a solo, right, exactly. Much more complicated than that. And in order to grow, they need more complexity.
Right.
So it's kind of irresponsible for them to say that, I think. In a fight one time with a guy. He was like, what do you mean? Well, I'm like, I think it's irresponsible. Irresponsible. He was like insulted. I go, yeah, you got all these young kids. It was a presentation like in a tech meetup group. It was at Stevens. And there was a lot of young guys. I'll use guys loosely to include girls. In their 20s and 30s, they all had obviously the greatest, latest app, the tech startup. They were going to make $1 billion, right? Which we know wasn't going to happen. And somebody asked the question, or maybe it was me, you know, what do you think about? And the guy speaking was from one of these CRM companies, like Salesforce or Outreach or something like that. This company's worth, you know, $50 billion. He went to Harvard Business School. You know, he had all the pedigree and stuff. So I said, you know, I tell a lot of people, what do you think about writing a business plan? Because, that's crazy. You don't need a business plan. And I'm right in front of the whole group. And I looked at him. I came up to him afterward. I didn't say in front. I go, you know, I think that was really shitty for you to say. He's like, what do you mean? To tell these kids they don't need a business plan? Come on. You know, and he was telling all these stories about how they run the company and how they changed as they grew and raised capital. Now they have hundreds of employees. I said, you don't operate without any plans. You don't do it out of your head. Well, no, I didn't mean that. Okay, well, then they need a business plan.
Yeah, and a business plan solves a lot of things because a lot of times people don't know what they're supposed to do and don't know where the direction of the company's going. Right. So it's hard for everybody to move in the same direction. It's hard for people to help you.
Well, if you don't know where you're going, everybody's going in different directions, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody's supportive, and they don't know how to support you.
And you know, when I do the strategic plan, productivity goes way up because everybody knows what the goals are and what the results are are to be, and they work together because they know why they should work together and how they should work together.
Yeah, and sometimes businesses just stray. They end up in some other business and it's not really what they want to do. And they're not even sure how they got there. They just kind of, because they're not working on using a plan.
Right. And a lot of stuff is done by gut. One of the things, like, I think you saw a copy of my book, Running Your Small Business Like a Pro.
Right.
And, you know, the third chapter is called What is Your Greatest Fear as a Business Owner? And what I've seen is it's numbers. Like, so many business owners don't look at their numbers, don't know their numbers.
Right.
And don't use numbers, don't use KPIs. So you can't improve anything if you don't have.
For those listening, KPI is
key performance indicator. So it's key information that you want, that tells you a lot about how your business is running.
Right. Exactly. They have no way to measure anything. Now, do you think that's because they're afraid to know what the truth is, or they just don't, they shy away from numbers altogether?
It depends. You know, afraid, don't know how.
Right.
And it's really not as hard as it seems. So, you know, that's one thing I try and teach people. And when I go in, I make sure that the owner or the CEO has a certain level of proficiency and make sure that they get regular financial reports.
Right.
Because you can't really know how your business is doing.
Right.
But a lot of people wait till the end of the year to figure out how they did. And it's too late to fix any problems then. So.
Right. Yeah. So, but basically by bringing you on, you're now saying, hey, you're doing the reporting and you're going to be like, listen, I went through the numbers and they don't look good.
Well, you know, the numbers are what they are. But I usually try to be more positive. I say, you know, went through the numbers. Here's what they look like. You know, we can do some things to make you more profitable. Maybe we could work over here to increase your revenues and decrease some expenses. You know, do you need this? Do you need that? But, you know, really just trying to make it constructive, because no business is perfect. Right. And, you know, part of business is continual improvement. So I really just focus on, you know, continually getting better than you were.
So do you find that it's part of your work with people, helping them evaluate the people that they have working for their company, what they're doing, are they in the right jobs, those types of things?
Yes. You know, generally I do coaching for the owner and also some of the leadership team. And many times I help them build the leadership team because they may not have people in the company that can do that, are the right type of leader and manager. So, so, you know, I'll help them interview, train them, whatever they need. Cause usually this is new territory for a lot of business owners, hiring somebody who's a man, who's a real manager.
You meaning?
No, I mean, like, into their company.
Oh, into their adding the management layers. They're not used to right. having that kind of stuff. Got it. So do you find that, assuming that they already have people, do you find that a lot of times people are either in the wrong jobs, or they're doing too many things, or?
They're always doing too many things.
Yeah, it's common, right?
Because, you know, whenever the boss asks for something, they have to do it. So, and, you know, usually if you have a business, you're very creative and have a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
So, you know, your people have to respond, because most owners are kind of impatient also.
Yeah. Demanding and impatient, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. Because then people just, and then what happens is they just do, I'll just do it, instead of actually strategically developing staff right. to do the right things. And maybe there's redundancy and all that type of stuff.
Right. And one of the things I always say is your business can only go as far as you're prepared to take it. So, you know, if your business isn't doing well, the only person you could look at is you, because right. you have all the power. And, you know, but a lot of times business owners don't realize that they have to continually develop and learn.
Right.
And they have to be the biggest ones to change within the company, because, you know, if they're running it, you know, you start out more of like an employee creating the products, but then you become a supervisor, which right. is a totally different job and totally different skills.
Right.
And then most people never make the manager
right.
successfully, but they are the manager, but they're not managing well.
Right.
Because they're not using numbers. And, yeah. you know, the manager's job is to improve upon the business. And then that's a typical transition. And then the hardest transition is going from being a manager to a leader of managers, because good managers hate to be micromanaged, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
So it's hard to break that habit. So I do a lot of coaching around that, because if you micromanage good managers, they either leave or they just wait for you to tell them what to do.
Right. They stop being good managers.
Yeah.
So what are some of the, since hopefully there's people listening to this, that's the goal. What are some of the advice that you give people? Are there certain, besides your book, because we're going to put a link in the show notes to your book, but are there other things that you recommend to people that you like, you know, processes, books that you have your clients read, all those types of things, advice for them?
Yeah, there's three books that I think are critical.
Okay.
Two of them are classics. So number one, Michael Gerber.
E-Myth.
E-Myth revisited. Yep. There's nothing better.
It. Yeah, nothing better. You ever see him speak?
No, except for just online.
He's but very, I did speak vulgar.
Okay.
Curses all the time. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, I did speak to him once because I was doing a conference and I was going to have him come as a speaker.
Yeah.
But his rate was a little high.
Outside of the budget.
but he did say it would be the best keynote ever.
Yeah, and, that's what he says. Yeah, he's fully. Yeah. He's very confident.
Yeah. but he seems like a cool guy. And it was very, very nice. And it was great to talk to him. And so his is one.
Okay.
Number two is Dale Carnegie.
Yeah.
So
that's how to win friends and influence people.
Right. Yeah. And then the third one is something I found last couple years called the One Page Marketing Plan by Alan Dibb, because marketing is your most important job as a business owner. And most business owners may not realize that.
Right.
Or may not realize there's a difference between marketing and sales. So, you know, first off, you need to know that. And if that's your most important job, you need to get good at it. So you need to learn as much as you can. And then the one-page plan allows you to, you know, takes away the fear of having to write something super long.
Right.
But it's a solid plan. And so his book and his model allows you to really write a solid one-page plan that you can use to move your business forward. So, and then,
what's his name, the author?
Alan Dibb, D-I-B. Okay. And his website.
I'm going to put that in the show notes because that's a good one.
His website's successwise.com. And the thing I really like about his is, in most cases, what you do for marketing as a big company is the opposite of what you should do for marketing as a smaller company. So
makes sense. Sure.
You know, so most people think marketing is marketing. So they, you know, they actually hurt small business owners by having them try to market like a big company.
Right.
And his is perfectly from a small business perspective, where you have to focus on being more creative. You have to focus on guerrilla marketing, minimizing your costs. And
right.
every time you spend money, it's an investment. So you right. need to expect things coming back. So that's why I really like that book. And a lot of people have found it very valuable.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely take a look at it, recommend it. Because I tell people all the time, it doesn't need to be a 100-page report from an MBA student with charts and graphs and everything. Just mine's not a page, but I think I have a template with like four parts.
Okay.
Like your company, your product, your people. The company, your people. So the company, product, your people, your marketing and finances. Like those are the four main sections. And as a matter of fact, the marketing, the finance is probably the most important. All the other stuff, if you read a business plan, it didn't sound good, then the person's an idiot, because who would write something that doesn't sound good, right? But the money, right, the numbers and the way you're going to market the thing is really what starts to show itself and if it makes sense or not.
Yeah. I mean, the marketing by far is the most important, because if you don't have a market, you don't need to worry about the numbers.
Right. That's nobody's going to buy it. Doesn't matter what it costs. It'd be free.
Right. Right. So, yeah. But you know, I do my business plan in PowerPoint. So, you know, being an engineer, I'm not a big writer, but I'm really good at bullet points and other stuff. So,
yeah, so it's like a pitch deck.
It's like a pitch deck, you know. Right. Mine's over 100 pages, but
okay. Well, it's grown up. I'm sure it was 100 pages when you started, right?
But I continually work on it. I add stuff to it every week.
Yeah, so that's what I think people miss, is that they don't realize that their business plan is not something you use to sketch out what your business is going to be and then throw it in the closet and start working on your business. It is your operating document for the most part.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like an operating agreement and bylaws. Those you don't go back to and you use all the time. You might change them every once in a while, but those are set. These are the rules. We have any problems, we'll go back to it and get in an argument. Then you put them away. But your business plan is really your operating document, you know, to run your business.
You need to have that to know where you're going and to help other people know where you're going so they can help you get there.
So how do you find, I know you do a lot of networking and marketing. How do you find most of your clients? Are they people that are referred to you and they're like, Andrew, I'm a mess, I need your help? Or they heard you speak, read your book. Where do you think it's coming from?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to really be able to connect with three organizations that support entrepreneurs and business owners. So what I do is either do training, do coaching, do consulting directly for the organization or for companies that are associated with the organization. Got so. It. You know, over time, it took, you know, it takes years to develop those relationships.
Of course, but it puts you in front of their members and shows you as an expert to them.
Right. So, you know, that's been great. You know, I've had a lot of success. So, you know, they continue to send me people.
Very good. All right. So do you have anything else you want to add, advice for people? You got anything coming up? You're going to be, well, actually, this will be a couple of months before it comes out. So you probably don't want to say I'm going to be on such and such next week, because then by the time I get it edited, they won't hear it.
Right. Well, a couple things. One, on a monthly basis, I've set up a webinar series, you know, based on helping your business thrive and not just survive, and really talking about key ways that people can grow their business in any environment. You know, it is challenging now, but even though it is, there's opportunities all around you. And what we do is we help people be able to look at the trends to see what things are going on and try to match those up with their strengths, so that, you know, it's a lot easier if you're riding a trend than if you're going, you're facing headwinds to the trends. So really helping people understand what's going on in the marketplace, where they might have opportunities.
Okay. And then you also, I know before this, we talked about a business challenge that you were running, but you're going to run it again next year because of the whole pandemic thing.
Yes. Yes. So it's the Business Growth Challenge, and it's really focused on businesses that maximize their growth 1 year, year over year. And through that year, we also provide support, resources, training to help them be even more successful in growing their business. So it's a win-win. Even if you don't win the money, you win because we're going to help you make more. We're going to help you sell more and make more.
Right. How much money do they could they win?
Well, we put up $20,000.
Oh, okay. Real money.
There's two winners.
Okay.
For businesses under $100,000 in revenue, and two winners for business over $100,000 in revenue. So it comes out to $5,000 a business. But, you know, the most important thing is you should learn things that will help you to maybe probably make more than $5,000 just from participating.
So if they go to your website, can they sign up for your mailing list or something so they'll be notified when this coming out again?
Yes, you can go to the website, sign up for my mailing list, and we do other events as well.
Okay.
But definitely we try and create opportunities to empower entrepreneurs and small business owners, because there's so many things that you need and that you need to know,
right?
That, you know, you can't know it all. So what we try and do is provide resources and support, you know, across the board in different areas of business, and make it affordable. So.
Sure. Absolutely.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.